From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 18th day of September 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office this afternoon. So I thought we'd prep for this weekend's game at Nebraska by talking with their Extension educator of agricultural meteorology and climate resilience. Eric Hunt is at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Okay, so we're really not going to talk about football, but number 24, Illinois, will face off with number 22, Nebraska, at Nebraska on Friday night. It will be a game to watch. Friday night football, make sure you tune in for Illinois versus Nebraska. Now let's turn our attention to water and how it's used in Nebraska. Eric Hunt is here. Thank you, Eric, for taking some time with me. Can you outline some of the ways water is used and the issues in your state?
Sure. Well, I can speak most intelligently about Nebraska and probably more the broader High Plains region, since that's the area I'm most familiar with. I'm probably less intelligent about water issues in the, you know, the further part of the western United States, like the west of Colorado. But yeah, Nebraska water is a major issue, both on the quantity and the quality side. Probably more traditionally on the quantity side, just because, you know, we are a state that, you know, especially once you get further west, irrigation is fairly essential for growing, you know, robust crops on, you know, corn, soybean, wheat. And I believe now we actually have the most irrigated acres of any state in the country. I think we actually surpassed California at some point in the last decade for irrigated acres.
How much water do you use? Do you know?
Well, you know, it kind of depends on where you are in the state. So, you know, again, like for people who are not familiar with the state of Nebraska, you know, the very southeast corner, south of Omaha and southeast of Lincoln, it functionally is a lot like the I states in the sense that most of the agriculture is all rain fed. It's predominantly green, corn, soybean mix. There's not a lot of cattle and, you know, there tend to be a few more people. There's more trees. But as you get west of Lincoln, I mean, you get into hydrologically and geologically what is considered the Ogallala Aquifer, which is the huge aquifer that kind of spans the High Plains region. And, you know, for about the first 60 to 100 miles of that, I would say in a traditional year, farmers would put on between 6 and 10 inches of water, mostly supplemental. This year, I think most of them kept the pivots off until pretty deep in July because it was raining quite a bit here earlier in the summer that, you know, spigot really shut off. So the pivots had to turn on in August, you know, but in traditional years, it's a little more supplemental. You get to about Grand Island, it starts getting a little bit more essential. And by the time you get to west of Kearney, which is getting closer to the 100th meridian, then it becomes, I would say, more truly essential in part just because precipitation is just less, and you're getting into higher elevation. You're getting into an area where your vapor pressure deficit is higher. So in other words, the atmosphere is just inherently just gets a bit more hostile in terms of dryness as you go further west. And then by the time you get to the southwest corner, kind of near the Colorado border, so not the western panhandle, but the southwest corner, I mean, there's traditionally been quite a bit of agriculture in that region. And suffice to say, you have to have irrigation there to maintain high yielding crops. I mean, you know, you could get lucky in maybe 1 year out of 10 on rain fed crops there. But even there, your rain fed yields are still substantially lower than they would be over toward like Nebraska City or, you know, northeast Nebraska on rain fed. If that makes sense.
The state has observation wells in place. How long have those been there and how are they managed and what are they for?
Sure. Yeah. So we actually have a very, very good monitoring system for groundwater. So our Conservation Survey Division, which is based here at University of Nebraska, it's essentially the state's geologic survey. So I think my understanding is I think almost every state other than Georgia and Hawaii have state geologic surveys, but they have wells all over the state. And I think some of them go back to at least the 1930s, and they generally have really good coverage going back to the 1950s. So they've been able to really track and monitor groundwater changes going back to, you know, certainly prior where irrigation was really common. So irrigation became fairly common in some places during the 30s, but it really took off after World War II in the 50s. where there's more demand for grain, and I think, you know, people realize, oh, you can grow corn fairly well with flood irrigation first, and then center pivot started becoming common in the 1960s. And of course, you know, we were home to Valley and Valmont, and some of the largest producers of center pivot irrigation traditionally have been from the state. And the center pivot, I would say, the irrigation efficiency is significantly higher than it is on flood irrigation. So I think that's one reason that we've been able to use water a bit more effectively. But anyway, the team at CSD, they monitor these wells. They go out and get measurements every single year, and they put out a map every single year of changes in, year to year. And I should stop for a second and just say that, when they go out and get measurements every year, so they get stuff usually in the spring. And so, like, for this year, they got measurements, for spring of 2024. Those maps won't necessarily be available until late this year, early next year, because it takes quite a bit of while to do all the processing and do the plotting. Because a lot of that is still actually having to go through almost literally by hand and just doing some analysis. Aaron Young is kind of the one who leads that effort. I actually brought him on my Crop Watch podcast back in the end of May, first part of June. If anybody wants to, listen to that, it's Aaron Young on the Crop Watch podcast from University of Nebraska. They measure those, and they actually, they can look at like our reports. I mean, they will show you year to year changes, 10-year changes, and going back to pre-development, which basically means prior to the mid-1950s, early 1950s. And, you'll notice that in parts of the state, we've seen tremendous drops in groundwater, but there's areas where, hydrologically speaking, there's been enough changes that there's actually been some increase. But for the most part, things have been, I wouldn't say literally stable, but the drops in groundwater in the state have not been nearly as severe as states to our south and west.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I know this may not be a popular answer with some people, but honestly, it's regulation. So our state, back in the early 1970s, set up natural resources districts, or we call NRDs, by watershed, and they are elected officials. They can levy property tax. And the other things that they do when you get further west is they monitor. Basically, they put a cap on how much water can be used for irrigation purposes over a three-year period. I think in some districts that are considered over-appropriated, which be mostly kind of the west central southwestern districts, I mean, they basically will tell you 27 inches over 3 years, which in that area, if you fall in one of those areas, I mean, you have to start kind of being pretty creative with how you manage your irrigation. So a lot of people have become much more efficient with their input use as a part of that. But that regulation has allowed us to basically maintain having a decent supply of groundwater. I mean, there are pockets in western Nebraska where there is like legitimate long-term concern, but for most places, particularly what I'm going to call like the prime irrigated country, like south central and in central Nebraska, I mean, those places, generally speaking, there's no real concern for running out of groundwater. Just because if they have effectively monitored and regulated this usage over the years. And, I think that's helped a whole lot. Whereas if you go down into Kansas and Texas, where, you tend to have more, it's been, I would probably classify it more as a free for all. There certainly is no state, they have not effectively had any statewide regulation. And I think local regulations probably haven't been as effective. And I think just culturally, I would say Nebraska, I think we tend to have a mindset of thinking long term. Like we want to make sure that we're passing on our our farms to our children and grandchildren, with the possibility of them still being able to use it, like you can now, at least on some level.
The regulatory functions are local to the watershed. Is that correct?
Yes, that would be a good interpretation. So, like, for example, like the Low Republican District, which would cover like south central Nebraska, kind of along the Kansas border, they would regulate that area. I think there are some functions that are done by our Department of Natural Resources, be it statewide. But I mean, in terms of saying like, how much water you can use for irrigation purposes and being able to, meter wells and things like that, that is predominantly the purview of the natural resources districts. And again, those people are elected officials. I mean, you do actually get to vote for them or against them in a ballot box in November.
What are the repercussions for going against the regulation or the if they limit water? What happens if you go against that?
Well, I mean, I think you do have the ability to do some trading, I believe. Now, again, I'm probably getting a little outside my comfort zone in terms of how that. But I do think that there are ability to do some trading with neighbors, or, you know, I think certain fields, you know, maybe could have more water. But in terms of what the penalties are for overuse, I'm not entirely sure. My guess is it's probably a first time offense would be some sort of fine. And then my guess is, though, they probably literally would shut you off, though, if you violated it more than, say, a couple of times. I'd probably have to ask our folks at CSD what happens. I don't know how common that is. I'm sure it happens. But, you know, I think for the most part, I think maybe a lot of those farmers that are in those parts of the state, their mindset is that, you know, we're all in this together. And, you know, we all kind of have the same limitations on it. So let's all just, you know, do things the right way. And so I think some of it is almost self-policing by neighbors. Not that they're literally going out there and checking their meters or anything like that, but just more of I think there's sort of a spirit like, well, you know, we all kind of have to abide by the same rules. Let's just do it. And, you know, otherwise the consequences for all of us may be worse.
You said that the water supply, the aquifers had been stable. Are there trends within that? Is it stable but lower, stable but higher? And I think you told me differs by parts of the state as well in that case.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I would say it's probably, in a lot of cases, it's lower than what it was in pre-development. We definitely have seen things drop in the last 4 or 5 years just because we've, you know, had a lot of drought in the state in the last few years. For example, 2023 was we were in drought going into that year. Then we just had an ungodly dry spring. It basically just hardly rained at all from mid-April through the first part of June. So, like, you know, the people that were literally irrigating by Memorial Day, which is very uncommon, especially in the eastern side of Nebraska. So, I mean, you definitely have seen things drop off in recent years. But I would say it's the declines to this point haven't been alarming to where, you know, it's, you know, they haven't been alarming enough to, I think, cause a come to Jesus realization that, you know, maybe we can't grow corn and soybean here anymore. Maybe we have to revert back to sorghum. We have to revert back to, you know, a lot more prairie, which, I mean, from an ecological standpoint, there probably would be some absolute benefits of having, you know, a little bit less corn out here. But suffice to say, I think just in summary, you know, there are places that have seen some increases. Most places have seen some slight decreases going back to pre-development. You know, the southwest corner is kind of except there's been a lot more steeper declines, but they've also had a lot more, they've been a lot more effective at, you know, regulating that area in the last 20 years. So they actually are growing quite a bit less corn in, say, like Dundee and Perkins and Hays counties, which is that southwest corner, than they probably did back in the 1990s. And, you know, that area of the state used to actually sometimes have some of the highest yields in the state on corn, and that hasn't happened in about 25 years. Well, it's kind of an indication that the irrigation restrictions and regulations have sort of kind of had a somewhat intended effect of keeping the, you know, water from declining, you know, at an alarming rate like it is down in Kansas. And there's a pocket in Box Butte County, which is kind of northeast of Scotts Bluff and south of Chadron. So the northwest corner of the state, for anybody that's not familiar with the geography of Nebraska, there's been some pretty steep declines there. That's kind of a pocket where there's some better soil, and, you know, they maybe get 15 inches of rain year round a line. So the irrigation is pretty essential. And I think for a long time, they put on, you know, copious amounts of water. I think they've been more limited to. But I mean, our situation in Nebraska is, I wouldn't say it's ideal, but I mean, compared to our surrounding states, I mean, we're going to be able to irrigate effectively for several more decades to come. But that's not true in southwestern Kansas or a lot of Texas, I don't think.
How does the hydrology of the aquifer work? I mean, in terms of recharge when there is rainfall and when there isn't rainfall.
Sure. So I think what you tended to see from about 2007 to 2011, basically 2012, we saw significant increases just because it was extremely wet and the amount of irrigation was a lot less. So like, you know, that spring summer rainfall is really critical for recharging in part because you're literally getting more water down there, but it's just as important if not more important, what's not being taken out. So if you have 2 or 3 years in a row where irrigation is a lot more minimal because it's raining a lot more frequently, then you tend to see it come back up a good bit. And it came back up somewhat in the late 2010s. So we had, some wet years in there. 2019 was a very, very wet year for a lot of the states. I mean, I think there are places that were, they probably didn't even turn on the pivots because it just kind of kept raining all summer. And of course, 2019 was the year that we also had significant flooding along some of our riverways after we had a huge March storm. We had tons of rain on frozen soils. We had just kind of a real mess along a lot of our state riverways. So there was some acreage that was taken out of production that year. So, years like that can be helpful. But our drought years, you tend to see pretty big declines. And, what we've seen so far this decade, 2020 was pretty dry we got into drought in a lot of state last part of 2020. 21 was better. 22 was really bad for a lot of the state. I mean, by the time we got early 23, we probably were in a situation in the state from a drought perspective that we hadn't been in since at least the 1950s. So, I mean, those drops, those declines over a couple of 3 years were pretty significant. But from a hydrologic standpoint, these Nebraska sandhills, which is basically most of west central, north central Nebraska, and it's basically just, exactly what it sounds like. It's rolling grass on top of sandy soils. So those sandy soils, water tends to infiltrate through them very, very quickly, very effectively. And it is a prime source of recharge for that aquifer. So that's another reason that there is a lot better access to groundwater in Nebraska. Some of that is just actually a function of just luck in terms of hydrology and geography, that we are a lot closer to the recharge point than, say, southern Kansas. But, I mean, the way that water has been managed in the state for the last five decades also plays an important role.
Wait, so you're telling me that the north central and northwestern, or the sandhills areas, when they do get rainfall, recharges the whole of the aquifer system under the state?
The areas that are in the closest proximity to it, yes, would see the most recharge and see it most quickly. I think the further away you get from it, it probably tends to not have as much of an impact on, it would be probably more from what's going on in your area. But my understanding from, talking to hydrologists is that it does have an impact over a broader area than just, right near the sandhills.
And how do population centers affect the aquifers themselves?
Well, it's not negligible in the sense that, we do have some cities in the state that are along, I-80, particularly, you go through, York's a decent sized town. Grand Island's about between 40, 50,000 people. Kearney, Hastings, we call the tri-cities. York Platte's about 20,000 people. And we've got a smattering of other towns that are, between 2 and 5,000. But there's realistically the highest population part of Nebraska is east of the Ogallala Aquifer, in an area that's much more traditionally rain fed. So there's not a ton of what I would call urban demand for water out of the aquifer in Nebraska. And that's probably really true throughout a lot of the High Plains region. So, I mean, the declines in water there, are primarily and predominantly agriculturally driven.
Finally, Eric, as the UNL, or the University of Nebraska-Lincoln Extension educator statewide in this area, climate and meteorology, what is it that you do for consumers and producers exactly?
Sure. Well, I mean, probably what I do is, from week to week, I put out outlooks and updates on the weather. So, most effectively for that region of the state, it'd be more about am I going to need to irrigate this week, or can I maybe hold off another couple of days just based on, the weather forecast? And I show things like soil moisture percentiles, and I do communicate groundwater information to them. But I'd say in terms of quantity water, quality water, we have a lot of other educators that have statewide or local responsibility for working with producers on coming up with you know, effective measures, you know, more efficient ways of irrigating and growing crops. And, you know, I think we have a very, very good extension service. We have a lot of good research that's done here. And I think we have a lot of very innovative farmers. I think we also, I think in terms of just using things like soil moisture sensors and evapotranspiration gauges, I mean, we have a very, I mean, not, you know, not literally very high use of adoption, but in terms of rankings, I think we're second only to California in terms of farmers who actually use those types of data sets to make decisions. So I think we are a fairly, we have a agricultural sector here that I think is generally fairly well informed in terms of what's going on in their own operations. And again, you know, this area is a lot more sparsely populated, especially the, you know, the western half of the state than, you know, Illinois is. And, you know, you might have acres over a lot of different counties. So, I mean, I think they tend to be pretty savvy in terms of monitoring things remotely with their phones. And, you know, for the last decade plus, they've been able to start and stop pivots with their with apps on their cell phones, which is really, really pretty cool. So, I mean, I think that technology has actually been a pretty big advantage in terms of being able to be more efficient with inputs. I had some other fellow state educators that, probably a little bit more, speak more intelligently about the water issues than I can. But my focus is more on the meteorology and climate resilience, and, you know, maybe helping them understand, that making sure that they're, using things like soil moisture, that they're looking at forecasts, that they're making decisions in an optimal sense, and maybe thinking long term about, you know, as things get warmer and more volatile, that, you know, maybe are certain crops actually, or certain crop rotations maybe a little bit more advantageous. I do work quite a bit with our soil health team. You know, we really put, you know, no-till is an important factor in the state. We've had a very high adoption of no-till in Nebraska for quite a while, and it's really actually helped us out a lot because that helps keep the soil intact. We have a little bit less erosion, which is great because we tend to have quite a bit of wind out here. And though that soil health also helps with over time you can have a little bit more organic matter start building up, and you can have a little better infiltration rates. It can hold water a little bit better. So, I mean, those are all things that are really all positives in terms of actually maintaining helping keep a little bit more groundwater in the system, because it means that maybe we'll have to irrigate a little bit less. So it gives you maybe just another day or two of execution in terms of keeping that water in there without having to put it on. And, you know, the typical irrigation is about an inch and a quarter at a time. And, you know, you got stretches of the summer, if it isn't raining and it's hot and dry, I mean, they may turn the pivots on, not turn them off for 2 weeks. They'll just kind of run every 3 or 4 days, or you'll get rain, or we'll get water from the sprinklers, as opposed to Mother Nature. But I mean, generally speaking, if they know rain's coming, they'll turn the pivots off, because they don't, I mean, that's a lot of money they're spending to keep that water going.
Eric Hunt is with University of Nebraska Extension. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report to talk about water issues. I'm Todd Gleason.